I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better.
Today, I'm joined by Jarvis Tasker. When I was asking around for people who I should interview on the podcast, Jarvis' name came up multiple times. Jarvis is currently head of communications at Happy Volcano. She has extensive experience in community roles. She's also won awards for her advocacy for accessibility. Her path into the industry is a surprising one. I've had a chance to hear the story in private, and I'm sure you're going to want to hear it today, listeners. Welcome to the show, Jarvis.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
Hey, I had a friend back in university. He always used to say, as a sort of a greeting or a farewell, have fun, win awards. And I never quite understood why he said it, but you actually did win awards. Do you have fun in your job as well?
I love my job. I like really genuinely love what I do. So, yeah.
Well, that's a very good thing to hear. Should we start with hearing your path into community management?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Bit of a weird one, as you said. I didn't get into the games industry until I was 29. So I had a career before that as a drama teacher. So very, very different to working in video games. And didn't ever think I was going to do anything else, really. I only ever wanted to be a drama teacher and got to head of department by 27, which is quite an achievement, and I was really proud of that. But unfortunately, I'm also disabled, and my disability kind of progressed to a point where teaching drama wasn't really possible to do in the way that I think you should be performing at for the kids. Like, I can't do anything if it's not as good as it could be, because the kids deserve better. So I took the rather painful decision to retire from teaching at 28, which was scary, trying to think what I'm going to do after retraining and everything like that. But games was the only other thing I cared about. It's always been my hobby for as long as I can remember. My dad got me a Mega Drive when I was really little, and ever since that day, that's all I did. So yeah, I kind of investigated what I could do in video games. And my degree was applied drama and creative writing. So I thought, well, maybe I'll get into writing, but then realized very quickly that you need like a massive portfolio of work to get any job in writing in video games. So I thought what else I could use that skill in, and marketing became quite obvious that I could do like copywriting and things like that. And because I'm a people person and I like talking to people and I'm a part of a lot of gaming communities, I thought I'd try community management. So started trying to find ways in, which again, very quickly discovered was very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that. And how did you find a way in?
I kind of forced my way in. I watched a YouTube channel called PlayStation Access, which is the UK's official PlayStation channel. It's Europe's only official PlayStation channel on YouTube. And I've been watching them for, at the time, I want to say around about 4 years, maybe a bit longer. And they hadn't started live streaming consistently at that point. It was before the pandemic. And they only had a community that wasn't really a community. They had fans and they existed in the comment section on YouTube, but there was no place for them to like congregate and be a community. There was an old Twitter account that once existed that had gone dormant. So I tracked down the owner of that and asked if I could have the account, and then started a Discord. And then the pandemic happened, and they started streaming. And then after the live streams, the chat all migrated over to the Discord, and then it started becoming a community, and basically was a full-time community manager for free for a year, just volunteering to get that going. But it helped them reach their 2 million subscriber mark on YouTube, and they recognized that. And because of that, they gave me my first reference, which got me my first interview in a paid position, which I luckily got. And then from there, the rest is history. So yeah, I've kind of forced my way in.
That's such a common story, or a frequent story I'm hearing about community managers who just start doing the job before they actually have the job. And I guess if you're passionate about it, you want to do it anyway. I mean, getting paid for it is, of course, much, much better than not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
If only for financial reasons, but
I think there are lots of things you can do that show you have the skills to be a community manager, like, you know, moderating Discord servers or being sort of in charge of a guild in an MMO and managing like hundreds of players and things like that, like all of these different things, I know other community managers have done them. And I think for me at the time in Access, one of the hosts was Holly, and Holly, she's no longer with PlayStation Access. She now works, I think, for Square on Final Fantasy Online, but she has been like the communications manager for CD Projekt Red at one point. And she, I think she was at Focus as well, but she was a midwife. And she broke into the industry by being like in charge of guilds on Final Fantasy.
That is incredible. I thought drama teacher was probably unusual role, but midwife to community manager.
Yeah. And she told that story on Access once where they were doing like a Q&A, and how she met someone from Bandai at a party once. And that's how she first got a job in the industry. And I was like, if Holly can do it, I can do it. Like, and she inspired me. So. Always grateful for her sort of sharing her story, which is brilliant.
I want to go back to your time as a drama teacher. Is that, how has that influenced the way you go about being a community manager, either in the way you do things or in the way you manage people?
Massively. And I think it's not just being a teacher, it's where I train. So I didn't do a traditional PGCE, which is what most people do when they become a teacher. I did what's called a skit, which is kind of more like an apprenticeship. You still have to do the university level, like coursework and written stuff. But instead of being in uni for like two terms and then school for one term, you are in school from day one, from Monday to Thursday. And then on Fridays, you do your university study. So you are working from the beginning. But that course was very much more of a hands-on holistic view of teaching than just like theoretical and academic. And part of that was behavior management with a gent called Rob Long, and he is probably my favorite person I've ever learned anything from, because he is all about, his main thing is fighting fire with water.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds so silly to say, but like too often people will try and fight fire with fire, and all that does is get people's backs up, puts them in a corner, makes them more angry. Especially with kids, it escalates rather than de-escalates. And his teaching very much taught me to look for the reason for a behavior and treat that rather than the behavior itself. And that I have taken through into what I do every day, because a lot of community management is about reacting to your audience or to the developers you're working with, and how you manage their emotions and their wants and their needs. And it can be very easy to put people in a corner and to label them as toxic and to not listen to what they're doing, but that does you and them a disservice. And for me, I find that normally if a community member is being loud and angry about something, there's actually usually a reason for it. And if you can get to the reason for it, you can show that you actually care, you understand what they're coming from. And if you can address that actual issue, you can usually turn that person into a really strong ambassador for your game, because they appreciate the fact that you actually took the time to listen and address it. And even if it's something that you can't change, often just taking that time to understand it makes a big difference to that person. And I've used that so many times in so many different situations, and it's just kind of become part of who I am. And I think it served me really, really well in community work.
Fantastic. I think ultimately we all want to be listened to. We all want to feel like...
Yeah.
People are talking to us, and it's part of the curse of modern life, is that so much customer support or interactions with organizations, we feel like we can't be heard, especially when you have to go through those chatbots. Don't get me started on that. That would be a tangent we'll never get back from.
Yeah, I know. It's a nightmare.
So let's talk about winning awards. As I said in introduction, one award I know you won was at Develop Brighton 2025, where I met you. Tell me about that.
I'm still kind of pinching myself about it. So every single year, there's like kind of like a fringe award show at Develop, and it's called Game Dev Heroes. And every year, even before I got into the industry, I have watched that on LinkedIn and like looked at what the amazing people are doing in games industry. And it's become a very wholesome, cherished award ceremony within the industry, because it's nominated by your peers. So it's other people in the industry are the ones that nominate you. It's people who are in the industry that judge it and give the awards out. And the actual event itself is all indie and naturally all sorts of devs. And it's just lovely. And I literally couldn't believe that I got nominated. I was putting a campaign together to try and get my friend nominated, because Harriet Spalling is another accessibility advocate and I want to be her when I grow up. Like, she's the same age as me, but she's incredible and she does amazing things. So I was trying to get her nominated. She got nominated for something else, but I got nominated and I literally was just shook. Couldn't believe it. I was nominated for the Progression Award because I basically, because of being disabled myself and I'm also neurodivergent, I spend a lot of time trying to make the industry more accessible, because I believe that you can't really get true representation in the stories you create unless the people who are part of a group are actually making those stories or have a voice in those stories. And I think the games industry has got a long way to go in representing disabled and neurodiverse people. And to do that, I think they need to have more of us behind the scenes. So I spend a lot of time trying to make our industry more accessible. So that's why I got nominated. Couldn't literally believe that, let alone winning it. I was so shocked. Some of the people that were in, well, all of the people that were in that category are amazing, but Sally Shepherd, for one, is one of the most amazing like advocates for women in games. And she was stood right behind me at the event and I 100% thought she was going to get it. And I couldn't believe it. And she like squeezed my shoulders when I got it. And I was just like, that meant so much to me because I really admire Sally. So it was wild and I'm still in disbelief.
So tell me, did you have to walk down some steps and up some other steps to get on the stage to get your award?
No,
an accessibility award where they actually thought about accessibility?
Yeah. As soon as I got there as well, Alex, who's one of the organizers, found me and he was like, is that ramp okay for you? And I was just like, yeah, it's great. But he had obviously put thought in, knowing that I was going to be there. I wasn't actually in my wheelchair. I was using my crutches, but it still wouldn't have been accessible if I had to try and get up the stairs on them. So yeah, it was amazing. Those guys that run Game Dev Heroes are true champions and they're wonderful and they do so much for our industry.
Let's come back to your work in community management. Is there a story you can think of a particularly memorable positive moment as a community manager you can share with us?
Yeah. You might have heard this one before, but when I was at Raw Fury and I was a community manager there, there was five of us on the team. We all had different games that we managed and Domekeeper was one of mine. If you don't know Domekeeper, it's genuinely one of my favorite games. I love it. I that's the reason I wanted to join Raw Fury, was because I loved that game. So getting to be on it was a dream come true anyway. Like, I legitimately, the year before I joined Raw Fury, was at EGX and they had a booth for Domekeeper in the row behind the booth that I was on, and I kept running away from my booth to go and play Domekeeper because it was so good. And Renee Haberman, who's the main dev at Bip and Bits, is also one of the nicest people in the whole of game dev. Like, genuinely love that man to bits, and I am so lucky that I got to like champion his game to people because he's just the best and he really cares about community. Like, he as a developer spends a lot of time in the Discord server getting to know the community and talking to them and seeing what they're passionate about. And he's also a developer that believes in the old way of video games, in that
the old way. This sounds like something from Star Wars.
Yeah, I know, but what I mean is, if you buy a video game, you buy a video game. You don't have to then pay for every single update and things that get put into it. So for like 2 years after Domekeeper came out, he just kept pumping out free content, just constantly updating the game, putting in loads of stuff, and it was all free. And that's a testament to how much he cares about the games that he makes and what the audience wants and the community's values and what they care about. So working on that game alone was like the best thing ever. But when I was in my last couple of months at Raw Fury, we had just reintroduced mods to the game and we were trying to find a way to get them like excited about mods. And we came up with the idea of doing a mod jam. So if you don't know what a mod jam is, a game jam is how Domekeeper was made in the first place. It's like a little competition. It's not always a competition. It's usually just an activity, but sometimes there's prizes. And you have a short time. Sometimes it's a week. Sometimes it's a weekend. Sometimes it's a day to make a game in a small team or on your own. If you're a solo dev, you can do it that way too. Don't know how you do it when you're on your own. You're a wizard, but and that's how Domekeeper was made. So we were like, okay, let's do a mod jam and get people to make mods for the game. And first of all, I can't believe I managed to do that. like Gareth, who was the brand manager, just trusted me. He was like, you can organize it, right? And I was like, yeah, never having organized one of those before. So I'm proud that I managed to do it. But the community were incredible, like absolutely incredible. We had loads of teams take part. We had loads of people who had never modded a game before ever join in. And those that had taught the others how to do it. And it was so wholesome and just, oh, it was lovely watching them teach each other and help each other. Like that community is the most wonderful, sweet bunch of people. And they're huge. There's like 25,000 people in that Discord server. And anytime anyone pops up, they're welcoming and lovely and helpful and just, oh, it's so nice. And during that jam week, it really showed the spirit of that community. But the best bit was the week after the jam, we did an award show and we were kind of poking fun at the Game Awards a little bit. But I jokingly said, we're going to do a black tie event. And I like green screened in the Game Awards stage behind me and got all dressed up for it, expecting to be the only one doing that. And because we did it in a Discord stage, when I announced the winners, I invited them up to say something. And when they turned their cameras on, they were in black tie. And like, I get goosebumps thinking about it, but it was just so like wonderful to see them like caring as much as I did about this silly little event that we were doing that was just for us. But that was recorded and like I've got a memory of that forever. And afterwards, Renee sent me a message and he was just like, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my career, because it really did show how much that game means to that community, how much they mean to each other, how much what we did meant to them. And it was just I think I'm going to also remember that forever. Like, it was just beautiful. Really, really nice. Way to finish it.
I like the awards theme that connects to the fact that you won an award. What you saw as some marketing activity or stunt or something actually obviously meant a lot to those players.
Yeah.
If they took the effort to do the black tie, that for them, it wasn't just some silly little activity. This is really important.
Yeah. And it was beautiful. It was so lovely. And I was very sad about leaving the Domekeeper community. It's one of the things that when you are a community manager, you can get very attached to the communities. And when you do move on to a different game or a different studio, it can be quite difficult. But that was such a beautiful way to end my time with Domekeeper and with Royal Fury that it felt lovely. It was beautiful. And it was a really nice way to cap off that part of my life.
Well, I'm going to have to make a note of this Domekeeper and check it out.
It's so good.
I really hope it's not a time sink. I don't need another time sink.
It is one of those games that is a roguelike, so you can pick it up and put it down. But it's also one of those games that you play at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and then it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, it's one of those. It's so good. I just love it.
Hey, listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com.
So let's turn a little bit negative. Negative is not the right word, but what's something that you found very challenging at some point in your time as a community manager? Something that stands out in your memory?
Yeah, so this is like actually quite difficult because it comes down to managing people. And also it also has to do with neurodiversity. So I also run communities in my spare time because that's part of who I am. And there's a group of wonderful people that I absolutely adore and they're all really, really lovely, but sometimes they clash with each other. And that can be really difficult because you are looked at as the parent in that situation where it's like, okay, you're in charge. Can you sort this out, please? And it's not always comfortable. When it's in like a work capacity, when it's like, I'm being paid to do this, I find it easier because there's a level of authority kind of there where like what I say goes and it's just tough. But when it's a community you're managing for fun, I find that more difficult because everyone is there because they want to be there and you don't want to be like authoritarian in that situation. But sometimes you have to, like, I always make sure there's some really strict rules in place for every community, whether it's a fun one or a work one. And those rules are there to protect everyone and to make sure everyone has fun. And I believe you have to stick to those rules to keep that place fair and safe for everybody. And sometimes that means I have to have very difficult conversations with people that I would rather not have, that I know is going to upset them. And that can be horrible. But I always try to think that I'm doing it for the better of the community. Like, it may upset this person in this time, but hopefully they understand that it's coming from a place of like caring and wanting to make sure that the community thrives. It's not always fun.
When you have to do one of these difficult conversations, how do you feel during or maybe after? Horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. The particular time I'm thinking of right now is really difficult. It was not fun. I happen to think a lot of the person that I had to have that conversation with, but it had to happen. People were feeling uncomfortable and I had to make a choice to have a conversation and I hated it, but it had to be done. And that is part of being a community manager. I know this instance I'm thinking of was in a less formal setting, but I've had to do it in work as well, where we've had to address things with community members that are really active and really engaged and obviously really care about the game, but they're behaving in a way that is not good for the wider community. And it's uncomfortable because you don't want to alienate someone that has been a champion for your game up until that point. And I am the kind of personality that is a mother type figure, where I do tend to care more than I should and wear my heart on my sleeve. And so I feel it. Like, it hurts me when I upset people. I don't like doing it. And part of that is being neurodiverse myself and having sort of social issues myself and, you know, feeling very deeply when I feel, right? So it is difficult, but I think I have trained myself to a point where I know why I set these rules in place in the first place. And I always go back to that. And even if it's going to upset one person, if it's better for the wider community, then it's something that has to be done. So yeah.
On those rules you talked about, do you have some examples of the rules you would typically set in place at the beginning of creating a community?
Yeah. Some of the ones that I always set when it's game related, we always have like an off topic section where people can talk about things not to do with the game that you're talking about. But I always put in the rules that conversation shouldn't be around things that are going to spark arguments, basically. So whether that's politics, or usually it's politics.
Yeah.
I always put that in the rules. I always put no hate speech. I always put that any community I'm in charge of, everybody is welcome, no matter race, religion, gender identity, sexuality. I don't care. Everyone is welcome. And if you make anybody feel that they don't belong there, we're going to have a problem. And I'm very passionate about that.
Yeah.
So, and that has happened a few times where people have been funny when people have pronouns in their names. And I've had to address that and be like, if you don't like it, you can leave. Like, no one's forcing you to stay, but you have to keep those opinions to yourself. So, yeah, I'm very passionate about that because I think all communities should be safe for everybody. And I will remain very passionate about that. And I think that's one thing that when I apply for jobs, it's something that I look for in companies, because not everywhere is as passionate about being inclusive as I am. And I will identify that if I'm going for interviews in places and know that I either don't want to work there or I do want to work there based on that, because that moral ground is really important to me as a person. So yeah.
I would say, based on what I've observed from how community managers work, it's almost like a standard operating procedure now that community managers introduce guidelines or rules to any new community thing they're offering, whether it's a Discord forum, a Discord server, or other tools, or any environment. The first thing you see is a page of, this is what we expect.
Code of conduct. Yeah.
Code of conduct. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it goes a long, long way. Just when there is a problem, to be able to say, look, you saw the code of conduct, so let's look at point three there.
Yeah.
Maybe in a more, as you called it, motherly way than what I do it. But yeah, to be able to say, look, this is not something I'm coming up with out of nowhere. This is what you saw
in the rules.
Agreed to.
Yeah. And I tend to go a step further on Discord now. And I, in like the channel that has the list of rules, I always put a little thing at the bottom that you have to react to by hitting an emoji or a button to allow you access to the wider server. And if you haven't hit that button, then you only get like the base channels. And I do that to protect everybody in the server and to make sure they have agreed to those rules, because anyone can just click OK when you have to get into the server and not necessarily read it. And I'm aware of that. But to have to go that extra step, then if I bring up those rules, they can't say they didn't look at it because they've checked that OK button.
Perfect. Do you want to tell us what you're working on now?
Yeah. So I'm a gamer, massive gamer, but I'm not a factory player, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I first got this job at Happy Volcano, I knew them for a completely different genre. They were the people that made You Suck at Parking, which was a game I found through Nico Hart, a streamer that is a good friend of mine and was playing that game. And I love that game. Just stupid chaos cozy fun, like it's just brilliant. And when I applied for that job, that's what I had in mind, and I was like, cool, we're gonna do like silly party games. And then I found out they're working on a factory automation game, and I did some research and I was like, oh, okay, this is a different kind of factory automation game. So the game we're working on is called Modulus, and to me, when I think of factory automation games, I think of Factorio, Satisfactory. Those are the two that come to mind.
That's exactly what was in my mind too.
Yeah. And for me, I don't enjoy those. I tried them and I played them for a few hours to give them a go, but I get stressed because you have to defend your factory and you have to like be okay with watching parts of it get destroyed if you can't defend it. And that pressure and that sort of fail state stresses me out. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. And also, I don't know if it's because I do have like depression sometimes, but if games are just brown or just gray.
Okay.
I can't cope with it. I'm like, no, I need color.
So interesting. So Modulus has color?
Modulus is beautiful. I can't, like, art director Antoine is a wizard. I tell him this all the time. Every time he makes something, I'm like, dude, that's so good. So Modulus is different because Modulus is a factory game where there are no fail states. There are no enemies. There are no timers. It is just creation. Just Zen creation. And I dived into the demo and fell in love with it. Like, and I totally didn't expect to.
Speaking of demo, so the game is still under development. Any idea when it's aiming for release?
So right now we've got early access coming up in October, on my birthday, kind of October. We don't know about 1.0 yet. We haven't announced that, but we're going into early access. The demo is already up. It's been up since April. I believe we're probably going to update that at some point, but right now it's the same demo that was up in April. And so that gives you kind of a peek at what the game is. And there are two different modes to the game. So one is your standard, this is a factory and you have to meet certain objectives and deliver certain targets and build things. And the cool part about that campaign is that different to Shapes, I would say, is the other game that's quite similar to Modulus. But with Shapes, you make things and then they just go off into the void. Whereas with Modulus, the things that you make actually make buildings in your factory and you watch it in real time. I don't understand how our art director designs the buildings knowing that they're going to be made up out of like these amount of bricks and stuff. Like he's a wizard. Our game director will say to him, right, there's 10 of these, 20 of these and 30 of these shapes, make a building. And then he goes away and comes back with the most beautiful building. And I'm just like,
an art director is an art director and you're not. I wanted to ask you about your role with Modulus. Given that it hasn't yet been released, what do you do day to day?
What don't I do? So we're a team of 11, and we have had a few interns over the development period, and I miss you interns. They've gone now and we miss them very much. But because of that, we all wear lots of different hats. I am the only one in marketing at Happy Volcano. We do have a publisher, but internally I am the only one. So that means I do community, I do PR, I do influencer management, I do events, I do award applications, I do all the Steam page and all of that side of things. Basically anything that involves someone seeing the game, that's me. So any one day will be completely different from the next. Like today, for example, where I've spent my entire day booking hotels and travel for an event that's coming up. And I hated that, if I'm honest. It's so stressful booking travel for other people. I thought booking holidays for yourself was stressful. Doing it for other people, oh my God. But then tomorrow I will be writing a dev deep dive for Steam. So completely different. But I'm also helping write the game. We will have a narrative in the game. It's not in there at the moment, but there is going to be a narrative in there, and I'm helping our game director write that.
So you have become a game writer after all.
Yeah. It took 4 years, 5 years, but yeah, I got there eventually. So yeah, I'm credited as a writer, and I also do the accessibility on the game as well.
Of course, it would be something wrong if you didn't get to get involved in that. I just want to briefly tell everybody that Happy Volcano is a customer of my company, but that's got nothing to do with this call today. We would have done this conversation even if they weren't. I just feel I have to make that disclaimer.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, but there is one very important question I still have to ask you, Jarvs. What game have you been playing lately?
Okay, so I've just finished Death Stranding 2. I am a huge Death Stranding fan, so I have already, like, sunk. Last time I looked, I was at 138 hours in Death Stranding 2, and then I was working towards the Platinum, but then I saw that Hades 2 had a 1.0 release date coming up, so I've parched Death Stranding for a bit, and I finally dived into Hades 2. So Hades 1 is my favorite game of all time.
Okay.
I've got, you can't really see her, she's squashed, but I've got Dusa right above my head there. It's my absolute favorite game. All of my usernames are Jarve Dusa because that's how obsessed I am with it. And I've been resisting playing the early access because I wanted to wait for 1.0. But now 1.0 is coming on the 24th. I was like, okay, now I can dive in. So
time is here. I'm always impressed that somebody who has a full-time job and a family and has time for games. I don't know how you do it.
Steam Deck or PlayStation Portal is how I do it. I wait until my baby has gone to bed, and then I climb into bed with my Portal or my Steam Deck and play it in bed. So those two devices are like godsends for me.
Okay, I haven't got the Steam Deck. I'm kind of scared of what it will do to me if I get one. Oh. But you know, whenever I'm coming back from a gaming event and I live here in Barcelona. There's a big games industry community here. So on the plane coming back from wherever I'm coming back from, there's other people also coming back. And you can tell the people who have just come from the event because they have the Steam Deck out.
Yeah.
And they're playing a game all the way home.
Yeah. Yeah. When I worked at Raw Fury, they do something called FuryCon every year where everybody, because most people are remote, apart from the people in Sweden, everybody goes either to Sweden or I think they've also been, I can't remember, Malmo. No, that is Sweden. I can't remember. They went somewhere else, but we went to Stockholm and it's an 8-hour delay. We got stuck in on the way home and we were stuck at Amsterdam because we had a connecting flight. So we couldn't even leave the airport. And if I didn't have my Steam Deck, I would have lost my mind. So I played 8 hours of Cult of the Lamb that day, just sat in an airport, plugged into their plugs with my Steam Deck. It was the best.
And the Steam Deck battery lasts that long?
It was plugged in.
I gotcha. Okay, I understand. Yeah. So as we're about to wrap up, I want to say that it's taken a lot of self-control. Once you mentioned you worked at Raw Fury, not just to ask you about Blueprints, which is published by Raw Fury. And I think I've managed to get their current comment accepted.
Honestly, Blueprints is one of the best games I've ever worked on. If it doesn't get loads of awards in the upcoming award sort of
surely
round, I'll
will,
be
surely. If I had to put, I'm not a betting person, but if I had to put money on a game that's going to clean up at the next round of awards, it would be Blueprints.
It's really difficult this year, to be honest, because Expedition 33 came out just after.
Right.
Which for me, I think is my game of the year so far. But then Hades 2 is about to launch into 1.0, and that's coming out just before the end of the sort of like award area. So you're going to have that in the indie category. I don't know. I think Expedition 33 is more of a AA than an indie, but technically the studio is an independent studio.
They're trying to sell it as the work of a very tiny team at an indie studio, but you know, I don't know. I'm not going to make any judgment on that. Jarvs.
Yeah, it's a tight year.
That's all we have time for today, I'm afraid. Thanks again for being on the show. The time has gone really quickly for me.
It has. Yeah, it really has gone fast. It was really fun.
If listeners would like to get in touch to know more about what you're doing or what we've discussed today, what's the best way to do that?
Two ways. So either Jarvs Tasker on LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn a lot. I like helping people with their career and stuff over there. So if you want to get into community management and you want to have a chat, hit me up on LinkedIn. Or else Blue Sky, Jarv Dusa, as I said earlier, over there.
I'll have both of those links in the show notes. I'm also on Blue Sky, by the way. I don't think I found you there yet, but I will after this call.
Same.
Okay, thanks, Jarvs. Bye.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.